Glad to be with you again for another edition of the On Fryer podcast. Joined as always by Derek Tokerson. I am Darnay Tripp. Hasn't been too long since we last got a chance to chat, Derek.
Yeah, long time no talk, right? I mean, this is about less than 12 hours, about 12 hours ago or so that we were talking about the extension of one Fernando Tatis Jr. that is still resonating across the baseball world.
Padres fans woke up this morning and it was real. It wasn't a dream.
He woke is locked up like in.
Although I guess it's not official, because still no word from the Padres, and Jace Tingler had to kind of skate around that while also talking about the young star in slightly more vague terms. And we'll hear from Tingler. We'll hear from Mark Melancon as well, who we got our first opportunity to check in with since that deal became official really this morning as we come to you on a Thursday morning. But the wheels are turning with spring training. We had a completely different idea of what this week's podcast would look like before around 5:30 yesterday afternoon, and then it kind of blew everything up. And the good news is we have the emergency podcast. So if you want about 25 solid minutes just talking about the Tatis deal that again is reported, more details coming out, but not yet official, emergency podcast in the previous episode. So there's that waiting for you. And we've also got a chance to hear from Melancon, Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, and a couple times now Jace Tingler. And so lots to pass on just in terms of what's been going on in Padres world, aside from Tatis, now that spring training has officially begun.
And you know what, let's go ahead and let's talk about Jace Tingler, because he again, until the deal is official, he can't say a whole lot about numbers or length or anything like that. But when Jace Tingler has a guy like this, and he's got a guy like transcendent talents. I can't speak that word.
It's a tricky one.
He's got a talent that is that amazing in the face of baseball. But he's so young. Again, 143 games. And there are a lot of other guys established in this game who aren't making anywhere near what Fernando Tatis Jr. is making. One of the points that Jace made was the guys are all in, man. They love this guy. He's a great teammate, and his teammates rally around him. So let's go ahead and give you a little bit of what Jace Tingler said this morning, just about the impact that Fernando Tatis Jr. has and kind of about his offseason and about all the accolades that have come his way and just how important of a guy he is and how this really isn't that big of it's a big investment, but it's not a big risk for the Padres to give out this kind of a contract.
That's a yes. That's a definite. Like I said, I think the talent's undeniable, and then the more you're around him, the organization, the scouts, the minor league guys, the major league coaches, his teammates, we keep it's just a consistent theme. His drive to win, his drive to improve. You look up and, he's videoing the Dominican. He's still wanting to play ball. He's working, he knows that there's areas that he wants to attack, and he continues to attack and work on. And those are some of the things that some of those guys that you mentioned, whether it's Jordan and, watching The Last Dance and things like that, there's hopefully some very common themes there. I think he's the right guy to market the sport. I think he's the right guy for just the industry of baseball. We need to market our guys, and there's certainly guys in the league that are great, and I think he's one of them with the look, the energy, the play, the drive to win, being young and talented and still wanting to grow. I think that they've done a good job of identifying him as of some other players in the league. And I think overall, that's what baseball needs.
Yeah, the mention of Jordan there was Bob Scanlon, friend of the podcast, asked him, can Tatis be this kind of transcendent talent? That's like a Wayne Gretzky, like a Michael Jordan, like a Tiger Woods. And Jay's like, yeah, no question. That's who he is. That's what he's going to do. That's what he is becoming. And to put him as a 22-year-old in the same category as a Jordan or a Gretzky or a Tiger, it seems like, and I'm always going to say it's unfair to some of these people, these young guys, to compare them to the all-time greats. But at this point, is there anyone else that we can compare him to. I mean, even Alex Rodriguez said on a national podcast that he thinks that this is going to be baseball's LeBron James, someone who goes beyond even the sport and into entertainment and movies and be able to just be the face of everything.
And he's got the personality for it. He's got the charisma. You know, you never really know what somebody's kind of aspirations are. I mean, you know, LeBron has been in movies and has production companies and does the shop on HBO and all that. I guess we don't necessarily know, you know, what his grand vision is beyond baseball. And it's probably good that at this stage in his career, we haven't heard too much about that. But he has the looks, he has the personality, he has the style. The dancing, the celebrations, all of that lends itself to somebody who is marketable in that same way. And so it's no surprise that Gatorade has hopped on the train, and BMW and Topps and the face of a video game now. And I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast. I've tweeted about it a little bit, and every so often I go and double check, and I did recently. If you're Adidas, what are you doing right now? How come I'm not being flooded with Fernando Tatis Jr. ads and viral videos and pictures and all that? Like, I feel like his apparel sponsor, like there's all these other brands and labels that are so on board and pushing him. And it makes me wonder if he were an athlete for other brands that maybe have more of a track record of putting together ad campaigns that get a lot of
Nike. Pardon me.
Right. Exactly. That's been something that I'm going off topic here, but it's because he is so incredibly marketable, because he was an MVP candidate. He had this insane season, and now he is a national face, a national name, a household name, certainly within the baseball world. And now growing beyond that, you know, his impact is so far beyond San Diego. Like, how is there not a Fernando Tatis Jr. brand of cleats? How come I'm not seeing a silhouette of his face with the sunglasses and the hair with the three-stripe logo? So I, you know, because he is just like a dream from that standpoint, it makes me wonder why we haven't seen more of that. But the fact of the matter is, that's being recognized by so many people and so many brands. And it starts with what he's done on the baseball field, just the electricity he brings to the game, the attitude. It's so refreshing. People have warmed up to it and come around to it. And it's, I mean, Tingler is right. You bring up a good question. Baseball is kind of different, right? Because like, other than people that really follow the farm systems and really follow the teams, how many people know of these top prospects until they arrive and until they're a year or two into their careers and are doing these things, and they show up in these sports center highlights and they've got these clips that are going viral? You know, we all knew of LeBron James when he was at the very least a sophomore in high school, and certainly for a lot of us before then. And that goes for a lot of athletes in the NBA, in the NFL. I don't necessarily know that baseball is the same way from a broader perspective beyond the hardcore baseball audience. And
oh, it's not. So, I mean, I see what you're saying. We knew about Trevor Lawrence when he was a high school kid.
Right.
You know, and he was at the Elite 11. He was working out here in San Diego, you know, and he's doing the Elite 11 camps, and you're going, this guy is going to be the next absolute superstar. We knew about him. We knew about Justin Fields. You know, we know about these great young basketball players, you know, the freshman who's going to be a one and done. We hear about all the AAU circuit. We know all that. Baseball is so much more difficult to project, guys, because it's such a massive learning curve when you're going from aluminum bats to wood bats to travel to 145 game season in the minor leagues. It takes so much longer for these guys to become impact players at the highest level. And it didn't even really happen for Tatis until he scored from third base on a pop-up to second base. And he made that, you know, matrix-esque contort his body slide. And that was when everybody started going, whoa, do you see what that guy did? And then he backs it up and does it again. And he backs it up and makes that leaping catch. And he's hitting these 480-foot bombs at Wrigley Field to right center. And that's when people started to really start to pay attention to him. He had to make something extraordinary happen. And the second he did it, people started going, maybe we should look at that guy. And then he makes something extraordinary happen 4 or 5 times a week. Then you can't take your eyes off of him. That's what's so awesome. And you mentioned Adidas. His rookie season, he was an Under Armour guy.
Right.
Adidas stole him for 2020, and they still are not putting him all over everything, everywhere. I don't get that one at all.
As you were talking, and this is a comparison that who did I make this recently with? I don't know if it was formally or just in a conversation with somebody, but maybe Patrick Mahomes is a good comp in that he wasn't of the Trevor Lawrence ilk. You know, he played at Texas Tech, you know, not exactly like a football power. And so college football fans obviously knew about him. We knew the name going into the draft, knew there was a possibility of him getting picked high, but you know, it wasn't, you know, a situation where he was, again, in Trevor Lawrence's type spot or a Joe Burrow where, you know, we knew a year or more out, like this is your number one pick.
Well, also, I mean, the big name guy that year was Deshaun Watson.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, exactly. And rightfully so, who, by the way, he needs to get the heck out of Houston for his own mental health. But Texans, do something right, please.
But, you know, it took Mahomes, and it was a surprise when he took over the starting job, right? Because like Alex Smith was there, very steady veteran. And all of a sudden they hand, you know, we knew there's an opportunity eventually, but all of a sudden they hand the keys to this rookie. And then you realize it once you see him play. And like you said, with Tatis, he makes these flashy, incredible plays that you don't see before and then starts doing them on a regular basis. You're like, okay, this guy is just different. And so maybe Mahomes is a good comparison, both in terms of the innovative, creative, what did I just see style of play, but also the fact that like for a broader audience, not necessarily the hardcore fans, it took him being thrust into the spot and then demonstrating his ability for us to really finally catch on at that level. And then State Farm and others realize, okay, we need to, like, we've got something here and we need to cash in on this guy.
Yeah, but he was going to be a first round pick anyway. And everybody knew it. I think it was a surprise when the Chiefs traded up to get him. So like you said, it was the Chiefs and Alex was there. And you look at him thinking, well, they don't need a quarterback, but they saw what they could get with Mahomes. And he turned into, you know, what he turned into. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of those guys who you knew about him and you're going, okay, no idea he's going to be, you know, a future Hall of Famer this fast. And he was going to come in and completely take over the National Football League and change what teams look for in a quarterback for now until the end of time. But he was still a known commodity. Fernando Tatis Jr. came out of the Dominican Republic, got a, you know, $300,000 signing bonus, which is not huge for, you know, when you're looking at some of the Adrian Morejon getting $11 million out of Cuba. You know, it's not a massive deal. You know, $1 million signing bonuses are usually given to the top 30 or 40 prospects on any international market. And then he just, from almost out of the ether, just becomes this force that you can't stop watching. It's phenomenal. And I remember I talked to my buddy Wes, and we were, you know, coaching Little League together. And I went out to spring training the first time that Tatis was there, and I'd seen video of him and all that stuff. And I just went over to the backfield and watched. And I called him that night. I'm like, dude, this guy is going to Cooperstown. He's like, shut up, whatever. I said, no, you don't understand. And you look at him, you look at the way he moves, you look at the way the ball comes off the bat, you look at the motions around the middle of the field, you look at the athleticism, and then you see how everybody else around him just gravitates towards this guy. It was just astonishing to see that in a player so young.
You make a good point. I want to continue to talk about real quick, though. Got to show love to OGs who you can continue to support, even though we're just in this limbo and kind of the back and forth with restaurants, but it seems like things are moving in a positive direction. You can order directly from OG's by calling the location nearest you or order from OG's.com. Purchase an OG's gift card. It's a great way to support immediately, but you can, of course, cash it in at a later date. Always good to have those gift cards in the back pocket, you know, for a rainy day, you remember it. And I don't know if you're like me, Derek, you're like, what am I going to do for dinner? Usually it takes hours for me to figure out what I want to do. And then You remember, you got a gift card to OG's, and that answers that. And of course, you can add to-go alcohol to your order. It's OG's 30th anniversary year. Keep an eye out for different promotions and specials that we will be offering throughout the year. Follow OG's on Instagram at OG's Pizza. A great point that Tingler made when Scan asked him about, again, and they're kind of having to beat around the bush a little bit because it's not official, and Tingler kept having to say, well, when at a later time, I'm going to be able to say more about this, and I'm sure it's going to happen at some point this afternoon. Maybe we do another emergency podcast with the immediate reaction from the folks involved. But one of the first things he said or referenced was hearing what other guys say around him and just kind of referencing the reaction of those around Fernando Tatis Jr. You know, he's not the type of star where, you know, all eyes are on him, certainly. But from his standpoint, like, it's not all about him necessarily. He has that warmth around him. We've talked about it ad nauseum, just the impact he's had on the clubhouse. And that's part of it too. Like, that's, you got to have a comfort level. And that's basically what Scan was asking Tingler, like, what gives you a comfort level in this situation with this guy to feel comfortable handing out this kind of deal? And that's it. You know, it's the way the other guys feed off of him, the energy he brings in. You know, there's not guys, you know, giving him dirty looks or side eye because, you know, he's treating them poorly or has a big ego. He's just an easygoing, fun guy that has quickly become the pulse and the heartbeat and, a source of kind of motivation for guys around the club to want to continue to up their game. He sets the tone for the clubhouse, and that's exactly who you'd want on this team.
And let's listen to Jay's talk about that very thing right now.
I think it just sets the tone for, you know, what our goal is and what's in front of us. And so, you know, certainly with ownership and the front office being able to make the moves, we've got a lot of belief in the group that we have in that clubhouse and the team that we're going to put on the field. So I think it's easy to look up. We talked about it, you know, a little bit, you know, this morning. It's easy to look up and read headlines or, you know, look at things from a certain point of view on paper. The reality is once we get out, that means nothing. What matters to us is the way we prepare, the way we work, and ultimately, you know, how we play. So, you know, but from an overall, you know, message, I think, you know, our guys are extremely motivated and they look, you know, to the left, they look to the right, and they've got guys that they believe in and guys that we believe that we can win baseball games with surrounded them.
Number one being Fernando Tatis Jr. And then let's double down on that. Mark Melanson talked today and he talked about seeing quote unquote small market San Diego go out and give a $340 million contract to someone like this. And Melanson is an interesting cat. He's very aware of what's going on around the game, having played for, I think, 7 or 8 teams now in the major leagues. And he talked about how he saw San Diego. And one of the reasons why he wanted to come here is seeing the fact that they are kind of going against the grain, especially in the COVID world, and going out and really going after it and trying to win a World Series.
It's great because there's so many teams that are doing the opposite. You know, it's sad when there's only 30 teams out there and, you know, you get a sense that a lot of them don't want to win. So to see San Diego step up and be in a little bit of a smaller market and really go for it is fun and exciting. It's a shame to see big market teams kind of dump, you know. I'm just fortunate. I found a really good team, a good place, you know, a team that wants to win and is, you know, is showing that.
Excuse me here. He just came from a good Braves team. Part of me is wondering, like, are these veiled shots at Atlanta that, like, we from some building tension or, you know, dissatisfaction that we don't know about?
I think it goes back more to his time in Pittsburgh, which is another small market team. When remember they had that like 2 or 3 year run when they lost a couple of wild card games, one of the Cubs, one of the Giants, and then just kind of fell apart after that because they didn't really finish taking their shot. I think he experienced that and then went to a big market. And he pitched for the Yankees and the Nationals. He's been in big markets. So he goes to Atlanta, another big market, and they go to the National League Championship Series, and it just kind of didn't work out with him and them there. So I think it was more talking about what his time and experience in Pittsburgh was.
There's I was going to mention this tweet yesterday, but from John Heyman, and it came out, you know, from yesterday after the Melanson deal. I guess it didn't become official yesterday. Either way, he says, to explain the dollars on the Melanson deal, he prioritized winning and took the lowest offer, but with a team with the best chance of winning of the teams he had offers from. His mindset was to go to a winner and not worry about money. Don't forget his previous deal was $62 million. And a reminder, that's in reference to the San Diego Padres. That's the team he went to and took a discount to go to have a chance to win a World Series. This is where we are in 2021.
This is bizarro world, man. it's crazy. And oh, by the way, we would be remiss if we did not also let Mark Melanson talk about his newest $340 million teammate.
I mean, just playing across from him, you know, his energy is awesome. And, you know, you can see how it energizes the team. And from everything I've heard, he's a great guy. He's got his head on his shoulders. And, you know, that's why the front office has stepped up and you know, come to terms with him.
How great is that? He's never met the guy, only played across from him. I mean, did he even really? A couple of years in Atlanta, and because they didn't play Atlanta last year, obviously, because, you know, going across and played in the West, maybe a couple times in 2019 when Tatis was a rookie, and to have that kind of opinion of the guy, that might be based just on highlights and reputation alone. How cool is that?
Well, and we even saw it last year, as maybe bittersweet as it was, towards the end of that Dodger series when we knew the direction that series was going, and they had kind of the dramatic game two where you felt like they had a chance to take that and make something of the series, and the Dodgers win that game and they go on to get the sweep.
Damn you, Cody Bellinger.
And he has that moment with Cody Bellinger where they're kind of laughing. And then Mookie Betts gives him the friendly punch in the kidneys, where it's like, that's one thing we don't necessarily know. We don't know how well all these guys know each other, and just the familiarity and the bond there. But I also wonder how much of that is like Melanson was saying, just observing him from a distance. And it doesn't take much, you know, being around Fernando Tatis Jr. to feel kind of the warmth, and, you know, he's not somebody you're afraid to like ask a question to or make a comment to, like he's going to give you a dirty look or something like that. He's got that welcoming aura about him. And so, yeah, it is surprising on one hand, but we've seen it more and more, players just kind of expressing their fondness for him in various ways, even without, it would seem like, having that much of a history or a connection with him otherwise.
The guys again, and we talked about this, and you made a really good point talking about when he was there with Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger. Game recognizes game, right? And the elite, the alphas, the 800-pound gorilla always know where the other 800-pound gorilla is, and there's a respect there because they know these are the big boys on the block, and they had kind of been that very exclusive club. And for him to already be welcomed into that club, it says a lot about the personality of the kid.
No doubt. No doubt. I feel like we've done a second emergency podcast on Fernando Tatis Jr., but like everything else in like the baseball world and the Padres world, it's like that's all anybody wants to talk about. I feel like we heard from Blake Snell again. We heard from Yu Darvish. Is it worth getting into any of that as well?
I did like what Blake had to say. You could paraphrase this, what he had to say about facing the Dodgers, because as we know, he wants another shot at those guys. He wants another shot at those guys badly. And yeah. Blake is not a guy who's going to back down from anything. What was your impression of what he said when he was like, you know what? Yeah, they're good, but we want a shot at them.
Yeah, no question. And like, you know, obviously he's a competitive guy, and we saw that in game six. Yeah, I was just, before we started this, he wrote something for Players Tribune about that experience. And I only got through like a third or a quarter of it, but you know how much that means to him, that opportunity and kind of getting that taken away. And here you are now in the same division as the World Series champs, the team that beat your team, and you're going to get 19 opportunities and then probably plus some in October. So it's, that's exactly what you want, right? That's what you want from your potential ace and a guy that's going to have to win games for you, you would think, to be successful. And he loves those opportunities and he knows what the Dodgers represent. He saw the way that things got heated between the teams last season, and he doesn't shy away from, what do you say? I'm here for it. You know, he said, I'm here for all of that, which you love. And so it's just another guy with that edge, that competitiveness, that personality, should fit in great with this team. And the really funny part was him talking about Mookie Betts. And I found two clips yesterday of him thanking the Red Sox and him thanking the Dodgers for making that trade back a year ago now, or whatever it was. And, you know, because he didn't have to face him in the AL East anymore. And I looked at the numbers. I think Mookie homered off him once or twice, hit like 307 and 27 plate appearances or at bats against.
So basically it's good, but it's nowhere near what Manny Machado has done to Trevor Bauer.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not his daddy. And so he had fun with that. And he threw that out there. He's like, I thanked them. I'm going to take the thank you back, but also said, like, the best part of what he said, I think, was that team's going to go a long way in making me better as a pitcher, because he's going to be challenged and he's going to have to be on it. And he was in that game six, and we saw what his capability was. And he's like, look, I want to face Mookie every single time we see them. I hope that's the opportunity I get. So, you know, he had fun with the trade, but you've got a guy there that doesn't seem to back away from those types of opportunities and those challenges. And they're going to see it a lot with this Dodger team, and both ridiculously talented. You know, as he said, the Padres threw some haymakers quick out of the gates, you know, in terms of the offseason and those acquisitions. And then the Dodgers responded with one of their own with Trevor Bauer. And so two ridiculously talented teams. And he's as excited about anybody to now be part of that rivalry. And it's another thing he said is, like, it's good for baseball. It's good for baseball, not just to have a high profile rivalry, two teams that could win 95 plus 100 some games in the same division to meet as often as they do, but to have the personalities on top of that. These aren't your daddy's teams. You know what I mean? These aren't boring teams that are driven by the unwritten rules and all that nonsense that, you know, feel like you got to quietly saunter around the bases after hitting a home run. Baseball needs this push. We've seen it. We've talked about it. And what better teams to have them? Yeah, you could throw in the White Sox as well with Tim Anderson. That would be a really fun series if we see that down the line. But to have teams like that with these personalities and the rivalry aspect of it is really cool.
That's what's so cool about this is you got a couple dudes in Blake Snell and, of course, Mookie Betts. They don't take no bleep from nobody, right?
Yeah.
And when these two teams get together, you can tell there's a healthy respect for the talent on the field, mm-hmm. but there's also a healthy dislike. And it's almost like, all right, everything's going to be cool until it's not. And you know, there's going to be something that lights that match and gets a little too close to the powder keg. And it's coming. It's going to come. And you just don't know what it's going to be or who's going to do it. Is going to be, you know, Tatis turning around and running into a catcher because he didn't see he was there. And all of a sudden, and boom, then it gets nuts. Because that's happening at some point this season. I hope it happens in the first inning of the first game, and then it is just mayhem for 19 games when these two teams go up against each other, because that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. You just reminded me of something, and then my brain just vacated.
That happens to me all the time. I'll keep on talking until it comes on back to you. So also another guy, actually, I did want to say this. The other guy who talked yesterday was Austin Nola. Mm. And that dude he's quiet and understated, but if you really listen to him, he is impressive. Because, as you know, he came in and learned a whole new pitching staff on almost no time last year. And he was gassed by the end of the year. And what he was talking about is already spending time with getting to know these new pitchers, because he's going to have to do it all again. He's got all the time in the world now in spring training to do that, which is going to be great for everyone involved. And talking about already talking to Victor Caratini, who we already knew, who was Yu Darvish's personal catcher, because Nola and Caratini were on a fall league together several years back. And he just remembers all those conversations that he's had with those guys. He's been kind of picking brains. He's faced, this is what was really impressive to me. He's faced Snell and Darvish in spring training games, and Musgrove in spring training games. He says, I remember him, because you never forget guys with really good stuff. So just a couple of at bats, he already is like formulating a plan on what is this guy's one pitch, what does he like to go to, what's his out pitch, what's he got in the back of his pocket. So he already kind of has an idea before he even gets to have a conversation with him, already has an idea of what he needs to do behind the plate to make that guy feel comfortable. That was really impressive to me to hear him talk about that and the work he puts in to be, as he said, quote, the servant to the guys on the mound. Yeah. That's a great, I remember he's only been catching for 4 years, 5 years now. That's an unbelievable mindset and attitude to have for a player at the big league level.
Yeah. And Snell, I mean, I think the first thing he said was the dude is just ridiculously smart. And as you referenced, the way he came in and took over the staff so effectively last year, you know, that was all the evidence that you needed. And now, you know, we'll see what the dynamic is with he and Caratini. And obviously, as it relates to Darvish, Snell said he and Caratini were going to meet and get a chance to kind of sit down and talk through some stuff today. But, you know, there's one question we had last year. We don't have this year anymore. And it wasn't necessarily because of anything in terms of like handling the staff. It was other issues on the other side of the ball, so to speak. But, you know, to have a guy in Nola that's just the steadying force, super low ego, just wants to help out the pitchers and make them, you know, put them in position to succeed and be the best versions of themselves. And then Caratini, that obviously has the familiarity and the comfort level with Yu Darvish, you know, they're friends. You know, with all these new faces and having to kind of get comfortable together on this new team, like you feel very comfortable in terms of the process of gelling. Like that's not going to be an issue with this collection of guys in terms of, you know, their willingness and eagerness to get to know one another, work together, figure out the best way to be effective. And like you said, a guy like Nola and a guy like Caratini that got a good, really good heads on their shoulders, and they know how to handle their starters.
And they know how to handle themselves, which is nice too.
Yeah, definitely.
This is going to be fun, man. Also, you're going to be going out to spring training in early next week. Tell us about what you're going to be, looking for out there, and what you're expecting, and what kind of coverage you can do. So I have to work less.
It's, you know, a different year, like everything else. Last year, there were a few of us that went out, and, you know, obviously both of us, and that's always a fun few days. This year, you know, we usually get to hang out in kind of the media room and the Padres facility and eat snacks as we're working away. And, you know, you got the rest of the media crew around, and not going to be the case this year. And, you know, we can usually meander the field. It's going to be more restrictive from that standpoint, and which you certainly understand, not complaining. Just happy to have a chance to get out there for a couple of days. So we'll see how it goes. We'll miss seeing the fans, certainly up against the fences, getting autographs and cheering for the guys and just kind of getting their first glimpses of the team. But I'm excited to go out there, you know, just for the mere fact that there are so many different guys, you know, to get the first chance to see Ha-Sung Kim, you know, like AJ said, on American soil, and to see what he does. Like, that's going to be really neat where they use him. Obviously the collection of pitchers that they have, how Paddock looks, you know, obviously keeping tabs on Lamet's health, and you know, seeing the guy with $340 million in the back of his pocket is always fun. But last year, one of the cool things was, you know, with Profar and Pham and Grisham, all those guys just seemed to fit in so well, so quickly. And there was just such a good energy and vibe around the team. And so excited to be around that again in another year where they have this kind of established culture on the club and the good vibes around this team. And now you have the new guys that are fitting in their own way, but you expect them to gel nicely with this team. So just to see kind of that new mix and what each guy brings to the table, I'm going to drive out Sunday. First full squad workout is Monday. So I believe we'll have a couple hours each day where we can actually be on the ground and get video and observe what's going on. Everything's still being done over Zoom. So that's kind of the drag, because we're used to just hanging out in the clubhouse for an hour or so every morning and chatting with the guys and chatting with Jace and usually AJ at some point in person. So it's going to be a little bit different from that standpoint, but be there for a few days just to kind of observe and, you know, breathe in that Arizona air and, you know, hear the pop of the mitt and the crack of the bat. It's always just kind of a fun way to, you know, enter into the return of baseball season. So looking forward to that.
It's going to be awesome. Baseball is here. Everything's trending in the right direction. Now we just pray for good health for everyone.
Yes. You know, I had a thought because, you know, that came up with the DH situation and it came up with Snell and Tingler in terms of ramping these guys back up. And, you know, Snell is like, you know, I look forward to being able to go three times through and pitch deep into games, but I'm not worried about that right now because I know there's a runway here. And that's a word that Tingler used often, describing it as a runway, making sure they have a healthy, safe runway for these guys to get to wherever they go. And so that's not a huge concern right now. I think Snell said somewhere in the 150, 180 range in terms of innings pitched. You obviously have a better beat on this than I do. And part of me was wondering, like, I get it from an endurance standpoint, why it's, you know, easier to stick with 170 innings year after year when your arm is kind of built up that way. I guess the question I have is, like, is there a chance that we get into the season and realize that, like, having a year where you're instead pitching 40 innings or whatever the number is, there's less wear and tear, and so it's you're fresher and maybe able to pitch deeper and stronger and more innings as the season goes on than you realize? Does
that make any sense? That's something that has to be considered as well. It could be, I mean, especially for some of the guys who have logged a lot of innings, and a guy like Blake Snell had a couple of little injury dings in 19 and a little bit in 20. It could just be a refresher. And then you can come out and you can go hog wild and throw 180 innings. But that's why they keep saying they're going to have to play it, you know, start by start, person by person,
right?
See how these guys truly are feeling, because as you know, everyone's body reacts differently to different stuff. Brad Hand can walk out and throw every day for 162 games and his arm be completely fine because he's built like that. Other guys, to Nelson Lamet, need to be throwing every fifth day or else something goes haywire with them. You know, just Jake Peavy, as we've talked about, if he got an extra day, if there's a day off and he threw on a sixth day, it was a potential throwing no hitter because this stuff just became that much more electric for whatever reason. Everyone's body adapts to things differently. So they're going to have to go through the season figuring out how does each one of these pitchers individually react to the workload that they're getting. If you start to see a drop off in velocity, if you start to see a little bit of, you know, the losing, and Larry Rothschild is going to be incredibly important in this, a little bit of they're not getting their arm on top of the ball a little bit, and they're starting to, you know, get their elbow underneath and the ball starts to, you know, get up in the strike zone on them. That's a sign of fatigue. So you got to take them out and get them back to the mechanic, shut them down for a little bit, let the whole body rest just a little bit more. You're going to have to look for a lot of just minute little tells that's going to tell you if a guy truly is on top of his game for the entirety of the season, because as we know, this Padres team is going to be in the postseason. So you're not talking about just 162 games. You're talking about hopefully 190 games.
Hmm. And yeah, I mean, you make a good point. It is going to be different for everybody. It makes me a little bit concerned about the Nelson Lamet. Maybe you feel a little bit better about Yu Darvish, a guy that's pretty consistently thrown a bunch of innings, and now he comes off a year where he had a lighter load. Blake Snell, how does it impact a guy who hasn't been relied on to throw 7-8 innings every time out? Joe Musgrove. I mean, yeah, it's going to play differently for everybody. Hopefully there's some of those encouraging stories as the season goes on where instead of looking at it as pitchers really having to take a step back in July and August because their arms are worn out. Instead they're getting to that point in the season feeling fresh because You know, they kept themselves in good shape. So it's not like they, you know, the fitness level of their arm, you know what I mean, necessarily took a step back, because obviously at spring training, they had to kind of stay with it. They had their season and then went through the normal routine this off season. Hopefully that puts them in a position where it's going to put more of these guys on the positive side, where they benefit more from the rest and the fewer innings rather than it impacting them in a negative sense. We'll see.
But the good thing is, if you need to shut guys down, you need to give them a little extra rest, you need to let them miss a start. Who are the two teams in baseball that have the most length and depth in their starting rotation?
Mm-hmm.
The Padres and the Dodgers.
Yep.
This is going to be so much fun to watch, because they're going to stretch out Weathers, going to stretch out Maury Home, they're going to stretch out Gore, obviously. So you're talking about three guys who can come in at any given point and give you a quality start, if not be one of the top prospects in baseball, like they all have been at one point or another.
Did you see the picture of Ryan Weathers?
No.
They posted a picture of Ryan Weathers on Twitter, and then he was in kind of the video melt. He's the last guy in the video they sent of the guys arriving. I didn't recognize him. And part of it is the mask. But you look at the picture of him from the Dodger game, and then you look at the picture that they posted, like, that dude leaned up. You know, he looks physically, he looks good. And it's hard to say. I mean, you know, we don't need to go all like James Harden, where we're analyzing a picture and figuring out what their diet and nutritional habits are based on like one still frame. But
Harden was just trying to eat his way out of Houston. He was sick.
Right. And it worked. So yeah, Weathers looks just, I mean, another guy I'm interested in seeing. Tingler said, because he was asked about that, obviously Gore, they're keeping the starter mold. They're planning on giving Morihone and Weathers a chance to pitch innings kind of along those same lines. Baez as well, but it sounds like more of a long reliever type role. So they're all going to get stretched out, but Weathers and Morihone more so in that kind of starter blueprint.
You gotta ask him what kind of workout and diet plan he followed.
I'm really curious, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to him at some point, but again, I was like, who is this individual in this picture? And part of it is not being as familiar with him. It's like, you recognize Gore, you recognize certainly the starters, you can't miss Chris Paddock, but it took me a second to figure out who it was, and it's impressive. And again, yeah, like you said, a lot of options, good insurance policies if some of these guys get banged up, and they're positioned awfully well. But as Jace Tingler said, in his boring, you know, manager way, you just got to go step by step. And he's right. I'm not saying he's wrong, but, you know, we all want to talk about World Series, but they understand that they just got to get through the intake process to make sure people are healthy when they arrive in Peoria. First things first, before they can get too far ahead of themselves.
This is true. Let's make sure everyone's healthy. Let's not have to have any delays for anything. And let's get everyone through there, you know, injury free. And then come opening day, it's game on.
So we will, we'll see when the Tatis news comes official. I'm just convinced it's going to happen at some point this afternoon. So we'll see how that goes. We'll hear from him at some point. At the very latest, you would think we would hear from him Monday, the day of the first squad workout. Maybe if it gets the weekend, they just wait until Monday, and we'll pass along some sights and sounds from Peoria next week. Who knows, maybe there's another emergency pod we need to do between now and then. It felt good, we hadn't done one of those in a while. So glad you hopped out of the hot tub. Apologies to the wife for interrupting your evening together, but
oh, it's all good, we made up for it.
I'll leave that alone.
I made a cheesecake, a chocolate cheesecake. It was okay. That's how really? I made up for it. Grow up, Darnay.
A chocolate cheesecake. That would pair well with the bourbon you were drinking last night.
Yes, actually, that was a good scotch. I broke out last night.
Scotch, excuse me.
Yeah, to toast the greatest signing in the history of Padres baseball.
Can you believe it?
It's nuts. It really is nuts. Like, you still think about it. Like we said last night, I mean, no team has ever signed two players to $300+ million contracts. And it's the Padres. 4 years ago, they had the lowest payroll in baseball.
Also, no trade clause, no opt-outs.
And the no opt-outs part is it's what's fantastic. That means that he wants to be here. He's going to be here. He wants to be here. He loves this town. He loves his fan base, and this town and his fan base absolutely love him back.
Because that's what gave me pause yesterday in saying this keeps him in San Diego through 2034. Well, not if he has an opt-out after 5 years and then 10 years, you know? But it looks like no opt-outs, no trade clause, and Dennis Lynn basically said he's getting a Machado contract after these next 4 years. And these next 4 years are at a lower rate, more reasonable, like we kind of, in our discussion yesterday, figured they might be, you know, when they have all these monetary obligations already out there, help them get through this period without shoveling another ton of money on their payroll. And then after 4 years, the big dollars kick in, and it looks like about, you know, 30 a year, the last decade of the deal. And, you know, we'll see who else is still around at that point, but it's not like they haven't built around $30 million contracts before. So no reason to think that that's going to be too rich for their blood. And after this, you know, 5 year window, whatever it looks like with guys like Hosmer and Myers and Machado and these veteran pitchers, once they get through that, they're still going to be in a position where if they're still willing to spend the way that they have demonstrated, the average annual value of the Tatis contract isn't such that it would interfere with that.
Well, then it's Abrams and Hassel and Gore and right. Weathers. And, you know, it's just going to be different iterations. You know, I see it like what happens with the Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals go out and they win a World Series with a bunch of guys, and then they come back 4 years later and it's a completely different group of guys. You know, there's no more Scott Rolen. Now you've got, Matt Carpenter. They're always competitive because they always just keep on reloading through their system. And then, oh, by the way, they have enough to go out and fleece Colorado for a Nolan Arenado.
So who gets the next $300 million contract? Is it Abrams? Is it Gore? Is it Hassel? We're talking strictly on within the organization now.
As we saw with Gerrit Cole, it's tough to throw $300 million at a pitcher because they do have the tendency to be so injury prone. Mm-hmm. So I would hesitate to say it's going to be a pitcher.
It's Abrams, right?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to. If Abrams gets to the point where he can hit 20 bombs a year and still have the bat to ball skills, if he's hitting 330 with 20 bombs and stealing 50 bases and playing a tremendous outfield, yeah, I could see that happening.
You heard it here first.
But remember, I mean, a guy like Trent Grisham, right? He's going to play a Gold Glove center field. He's going to hit for some power, but he's not going to have the same kind of presence that a Tatis has or a Machado has, right? Sure. Like those are guys like a Bryce Harper has a presence when he's in the room. Giancarlo Stanton has a presence when he's at the plate, when he's healthy, if he can actually ever stay healthy again. Those are the kinds of guys that get the $300 million contracts. The Grishams of the world get $100 million contracts, you know, which is certainly nothing to sneeze at, but it's, you know who the really good players are and you know who the guys in Cooperstown are already making plaques of. And Tatis is a guy they're already making a plaque of. Machado's a guy they're already making a plaque of. You know, those guys are just different.
So like February of 2024, 2025, we'll have an emergency pod after CJ Abrams lands like a 10-year 250.
Correct. He'll get like an Anthony Rendon kind of contract.
Looking forward to that. We're just spending money willy-nilly. Do you ever think when we started this podcast almost 2 years ago to the day that we'd talking about, we'd just be spending Peter Seidler's money like there's no tomorrow?
Well, at the time we thought we'd be spending Ron Fowler's money like there's no tomorrow, but we also never thought that we'd be spending quite this much of their money like there's no tomorrow. And I'm telling you, man, it has to be because it was one of two things. Either A, they're making so much money off the Brown uniforms, and you know, the beauty of Petco Park, which is fantastic that they can do something like this, or it's Bitcoin. Like that, that's the only thing I can come up with is, or, you know what it might be? Peter Seidler is actually Mario from Super Mario Brothers. And all those coins that he gathers, he just turns into cash and gives to his players.
And that's why you always pick up the coins. It's easy to just run past the coins. You always
You always get the coins, right? Because you give you extra lives. Even in Mario Kart, I don't know what the heck the stupid coins do in Mario Kart, but I always get them just because it's habit. You get the coins in Mario Kart.
They keep you from sliding out. If you run out of coins and somebody bumps you, you spin out.
Is that what that's for?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have coins, you'll notice whenever somebody bumps you, coins will pop out of your head. So
yeah, because Rainbow Road always kills me like that.
Yeah. So that's, it gets tough, especially if you're not ahead of the pack and then you run out of coins and you're just like in the thick of it. Somebody taps you and you spin out. And next thing you know, you're getting lapped by the princess and you hit reset and start over because you're really, really angry.
Why do you hate princesses, Darnay?
Oh man, I swear, whenever I play, I think it depends on who you choose as your racer. Depends on who ends up being like the most competitive. And usually I'm like Toadstool or the turtle. And I swear the princess is always the fastest one out there and she's always getting my way and it drives me crazy.
See, that's why I race as Bowser, because everyone has different capabilities. Like the princess accelerates really fast, but doesn't have a high top end speed, Princess Peach. Whereas Bowser accelerates slower, but his top end speed, once he gets there, you're not catching him.
But see, that's what I don't like about Bowser, because if you are, you know, once you're in that like 150cc mode and you're not just starting at the front all the time, if you're struggling, it's hard to make up ground. But on the flip side, when you're one of the smaller, faster guys and you have Bowser and Donkey Kong in front of you and you're running like seventh or eighth, that's like a brick wall you're trying to get around. So, I mean, either way, it's a challenge.
That's why I just got to be Jimmy Johnson. Why can't I have a Jimmy Johnson in the game and everything be fine?
That's true. That would make it easy.
Before we devolve into a complete nerd Mario Brothers discussion here, thanks for listening to the On Fire podcast.
Yeah, we'll plan on coming to you at some point next week. I don't know. Maybe there's an opportunity earlier in the week since they'll be out there. Maybe we check in Monday. Well, we'll probably have heard from Fernando Tatis Jr. at some point. So my guess would be we'll have another episode before next Thursday. So stay tuned. We'll let you know. Follow us on Twitter. We always post an article with every episode on the Sports Wrap page and NBC7.com. So we'll let you know. But baseball is back. And so you're going to be hearing from us a lot more, which is exciting.
You can go out there and make sure you get their reaction on Carson Wentz to the Eagles, or to the Colts.
No, we don't need to talk about that.
Man, see ya.
See ya.